Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner, and I am in the political center, and this is both sides of the aisle. I am so excited to have John Dugal on the right.
Hey, good to be with you.
And Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello, listeners. Hope you're doing well and staying cool.
Fresh out of the 4th of July weekend, Independence Day.
You know, there you go, triggering me. We're celebrating an event, not a date.
Favorite memory from both of you. I'll do mine first. I had J-Dogs with my family.
Oh,
The kind where we make our own, but we go buy the special sauce and a wonderful barbecue with my beautiful daughter and her son, Jethro.
Yes.
And with the extended Gochner family. And it was just... very heartwarming.
Yeah.
Beautiful Salt Lake City evening.
Well, so as listeners can probably imagine, not super in the mood for King's Day. I do appreciate and love the idea that we are celebrating our independence from a monarch, right? I would love for an invitation to be extended that we, you know, maybe make it to our next 4th of July without a king, which would be great. But I actually went up to Evanston and went to Wyoming Downs. And I love horses. I'm kind of,
Is this your first visit to Wyoming Downs?
It's my first visit to the Downs. Okay. So I've been up to Wyoming many times. I have to say, I loved it. I kind of grew up horse adjacent. My cousin had horses. People around me had horses. If I get a chance to go out and ride, sometimes Mayor of Sandy, Monica Zoltansky, will invite me out to ride in Dimple Dell. But seeing a horse race is a thrilling event. And it was a wonderful kind of reckoning, I think, of where we are as Americans, especially when you see how many immigrants, how many brown folks are involved in these communities, in these sports. It was wonderful, but I just, as a runner, I'm from North Dakota, so these are the kinds of things I like.
I love it. I've been to the Downs, and I will just say, as an LDS gal, my sister married into a family that is big into horse racing and breeds the racehorses.
Oh, wow.
And used to have a horse that I watched win there named Helaman's Warrior, which will mean something to the LDS crowd. That's a Book of Mormon name, but they would name their horses after Book of Mormon characters.
Amazing. Wow.
John.
You know, so as you know, going to law school has been on the bucket list for 40 years and the bar exam's in 3 weeks. And so I spent pretty much the whole weekend studying. I did have a hamburger.
No
but
fun.
Otherwise, study.
Shireen, you had a horse that won, if I remember.
I did.
Right? Yeah. And I have a new bird's nest on my porch, on my wreath. Second time this summer that a mother has put her nest there.
Oh,
and I'm just saying there's some good omens out there.
Okay.
So let's be positive, even as we go forward to talk about tough news
or really tough, hard things. Yeah.
Where do you guys want to start?
It's hard not to be thinking about this community in Texas.
Yes.
Yeah. So over the weekend, reports are coming out about horrific flooding in Texas that has, I believe now, I'm sure this number will be different when you hear this, listeners, but at the time that we're recording, about 80 people have lost their lives. An additional 80 people are still missing. There is, you know, pretty significant evidence to suggest that the local NOAA station, so the federal government has invested for a long time in a National Weather Service, and we have field offices across this country, and that office was missing its top hydrologist, some of its top storm trackers. They've been cut in the dozing of America.
Took the early retirement.
Some of it is voluntary, but what it has left is an infrastructure that did not have the professionals that they needed to be able to warn communities in appropriate ways. And I have to say, watching the news coverage of this, watching communities try to respond to this, is giving major Uvalde vibes. Like, people were unprepared.
Yeah.
And people are mad as hell, and they should be. I would be.
Yeah.
I would be.
John, it's hard to take a live fire crisis like this and start talking about the pointing fingers. But there's also a reason why this will get politicized pretty quickly here. And I'm just glad it's not L.A. It's a Republican state, but they've got to reconcile that their forecasts were so off that there was no way that these communities could respond.
Yeah, well, I mean, the very first thing is it's horrifically tragic. I can't imagine, you know, having kids and sending them off to camp and having something like this happen. And so we have to remember the suffering that's going through. I have a friend that lives in close proximity that was not affected by this. Lots of rain, but not flooding. But very close to this location. And the other thing it highlights for me is just, you know, we think that we can control all things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the weather is of such magnitude that we can adapt and adjust to it, but we can't control it.
And getting more extreme.
And
it's getting more extreme.
And so And so this is one of those things. But it's any kind of tragedy is going to get politicized. You know, what was the state's responsibility? What was the federal government's responsibility? Other things like this. Whether it was or wasn't, it will still get politicized that way.
Yeah, more to come.
I have to add, though, on this very different, but I saw one of your Utah County commissioners, it's Amelia Powers, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the news talking about people coming to visit, having, you know, vacation time, being out on our forest land, having numerous bathrooms closed. And the reason, and part of the reason that there are numerous bathrooms closed is because of cuts to the Forest Service. And she was saying, I'm a supporter of, you know, voted for Donald Trump. But even this, right, is not responsible government. And I just have to say, like, we're going to see more and more examples of this. Hopefully they're not as horrific as the loss of life that we're seeing in Texas. But the impact of this administration is detrimentally making people's lives just worse, I guess I would say. Worse.
Yeah.
Well, and I would just highlight, I mean, I still come back and question, why do we have the federal government involved in so much of this? I understand that it's going to take time to unravel that, but I think there are many, you know, either state governments or private actors that will step up and fill the void in various different activities.
And part of what they're, yeah, sure. But part of what we're hearing, right, is local people don't want to pay for this. That's what, you know, we're hearing in Utah County.
Well, we live in a world in which,
the
overwhelming majority of people don't want to pay for things. And that's why we have a massive debt that's blown out of control.
Yeah.
Because they want something for nothing.
Hey, so they've now called this bill that passed B5, the big, beautiful budget busting bill. B5.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump and Elon Musk, their relationship continues to escalate into a bigger feud. Yeah, yeah, bigger feud. But Musk is now announcing the formation of the America Party. And this will be really interesting to watch. I would predict that that America Party will ultimately merge with the Forward Party.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know. I'm just throwing out. The Murray July 4th parade had the Forward Party in it. And all these
and
people marching.
Who the Forward Party is.
Well, help me get it right.
Yeah, so came out of Andrew Yang, and who ran for president as kind of a Democrat, but his whole thing was, I'm not left or right. We're trying to move forward. And I believe the only elected representative in the Forward Party in the United States is Senator Daniel Thatcher, who left the Republican Party this year and joined the Forward Party.
And Utah's local party merged with the Forward Party, the third party. What's it called?
United Utah.
United Utah merged with it.
Mm-hmm.
When they marched, their chant was, not left, not right, forward.
Yeah.
They worked in a parade.
Yeah.
But I think this could be really interesting. John, politics makes strange bedfellows. When you create this third party, a lot of people are going to come to it that can't feel comfortable in either party.
Yeah. But the challenge is, for a third party, the system is so stacked in favor of the two major parties, it is hard for a third party to get itself established, get on the ballots, and get any traction.
Honestly, and organize.
Clearly, yeah. Elon Musk has a lot of money. That will help facilitate certain activities, but you still got to get people involved in getting people to participate. And when it comes to a vote, a lot of people just feel like, even though I don't like the Republican or Democratic Party, I got to vote for one or the other, because if I vote for a third party, I'm throwing my vote away, which is a sad commentary about how things have shaken out.
We've got a bunch of Supreme Court rulings I want to walk through, but I'm going to do it in the second segment so we can take just a little bit more time on them. So let's do a little lightning round on a few other things. Shereen, I want to hear you comment on the attorneys for Gilmar Albrego Garcia are talking about. He has been tortured while he was in another country.
Yeah.
Beating, severe sleep deprivation, bad nutrition, psychological torture. My goodness.
So let's remember, this is a person who was sent abroad to a horrific, well-known prison in El Salvador without due process, was forced to be returned back. It is no surprise that this individual experienced traumatic torture in this context and in this setting. I don't know why we should expect anything else. This is exactly what this prison is known for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, do you want to say anything on that? I mean, I don't get this. Like, why do we do this to people?
Yeah, I don't know. There are different ways to go about. I mean, if you're trying to get illegal immigrants out of the country, there are better, smarter ways to go about doing it.
Yeah.
I guess maybe this sends a message, you know, globally of stay away. I mean, I think there's a big part of messaging that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me, this is one of those unnecessary errors of the Trump administration to go down and say, we're going to intentionally deport this guy to a prison out of the country without due process. And whether you like
it
or not,
we'll engage in this behavior.
Due process applies to those that are, you know, citizens and non-citizens in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't meet our ideals as a country.
I have to add, though, this is what we're seeing now in the data, the people who have been forcibly taken out of this country, is it's not meeting the promise of this president. These are not, by and large, in fact, the vast majority are not criminals, right? So the only ways in which they've broken the law is because they are experiencing broken laws. There are not the kind of promise that we were made about the kind of people that would be kicked out of here is not what's happening. Yeah. And in fact, it's people who are speaking up against issues that this government does not like.
And this is one of those things. I think for a lot of folks, you and me, Shireen, we think, and when we talk about criminals, we're talking about violent criminals, da 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 da. For many in the Trump administration, the simple fact that you overstayed your visa, we're not even talking about those that cross the border illegally. Let's say you came legally and you overstayed your visa.
Yeah.
They consider those criminals as well.
Until they're their neighbors or they're members of their church, right? The people that they work with. What we're seeing is when this is actually touching these small Trump-voting towns, they're horrified by what's happening.
And that's where we get into the, okay, I'm good with this, I'm not good with that. But right here, when it touches close to home,
yeah,
you know, is this what they assumed would take place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk about some of these very significant Supreme Court decisions that are affecting things. Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shireen Gourbani. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. John, you're taking the bar exam, so you're our local attorney and legal expert.
Not an attorney yet.
A legal eagle on this team. We got this in, the judge struck down the Trump's ban on the asylum claims at the southern border. And this was a federal judge in Washington, D.C. A big decision.
Yeah, well, and the bigger decision gets into really this nationwide injunction. You know, should a single federal judge be able to apply an injunction universally across the country? And basically they said, no. I mean, they put in more stringent expectations of what you need to consider before you do that. But we're seeing this, whether it was, you know, previously with the Biden administration, whether it's today with the Trump administration, we're seeing federal judges and people doing forum shopping to find where there's going to be a sympathetic judge to try and get them to put in place a universal injunction to allow whatever practice is being contested to continue while something is being litigated.
So you've got a ruling that's overturning decades of precedent. And what I find interesting about it is whoever the next Supreme Court nominee will be when there's a vacancy.
I would say it's not decades of precedents, but it's decades of tradition.
Okay.
Because precedence is, hey, you go back to the founding and roll forward, this action, this type of behavior didn't even kick in until a few decades ago.
Well, this is partly where I'm coming from, though, is when we have a new, a vacancy and a new candidate, Supreme Court candidate, whatever, the nature of the confirmation hearings will be different because now you don't have to be true to the past.
No.
And I always remind my son, who questions me on things like this a bit, that yeah, you don't like this court because you're philosophically different, but people that were philosophically different than you had to deal with the prior courts for so many decades that were different from them.
Yeah.
So there's something there.
I just think we have to be honest that there's a Republican supermajority on the Supreme Court, and we should expect it to behave in a way that serves the Republican Party. Yeah. That's what's happening.
I would disagree, especially on this issue right here. This issue is really, should one single judge be able to put in place something that stops or alters something across the entire nation?
Well, it's been happening for decades.
This is for decades, but it was not happening for hundreds
even
of
when
years.
The president's
that's why they came
doing
back
something
and said,
illegal.
These judges are overstepping their authority when they do this.
I think Natalie's question is right. Even when the president is doing something illegal?
Well, that's where we have a judicial process and you got to work yourself through it.
And then you should expect this Republican Supreme Court to be fine with it.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Well, another one, John, this is the Maryland one, but this one is about public schools and parental rights and this idea that, you know, if your public school's going into some books and some curriculum that you don't like, in this case, LGBTQ kind of issues, can parents pull their kids?
Well, in this district, they allowed parents to pull their kids out, and then they changed the policy and said, we're not going to allow you to pull your kids out, and thus this litigation. And
that will lose every
Court,
time. The notion that parents don't have some control over what their kids are taught.
Right. And that you couldn't opt your kids out of whatever it might be. And I get that some say, well, we need to force whatever the topic is, and kids need just to be faced with those issues. But this is one of the wars when it comes to public education. We basically price people out from being able to choose their own education, and therefore you're basically, this is your only option. And then if it teaches a curriculum, and I don't care if it's on this side, which is LGBTQ plus books, or if it's the other side saying, you shouldn't force my kids to learn how to use guns and Second Amendment stuff. I mean, it goes both ways. And all of a sudden we get all sorts of culture wars in our public schools as a result.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of my kid being exposed to ideas. I don't know. I don't really need. I mean, I think I'm just very, I'm growing weary of the argument from the right about freedom. What I see is freedom being restricted at nearly every intersection in public life.
Mm, interesting. You know, I'm of a mixed mind on this one. I want parents to have, you know, a lot of control over what their kids get to see and do. But I'm a huge defender of public schools. I mean, I believe in that. So, Okay, let's do a kind of an interesting one.
I was going to throw in one other thing that's kind of closely related. You've got Texas, and there was a court down there, and I've dealt in the past with trying to fight against, trying to help parents protect kids, fight against pornography online. And then the Supreme Court allowed Texas to have an age verification for accessing obscene materials.
Yeah.
And so I did not think the courts would go down this path. And then they decided, no, what Texas is doing is all right, which has changed what was
very related.
For about 20 years.
Yeah, interesting.
I'll just say we're willing to do that, but kids will find it. And what we've done almost none of is investing in how we can help parents navigate these really complicated conversations in age-appropriate ways so the kids understand what they're being exposed to and that it's not real and why it would be important to not think about it as a common practice in terms of sex and sexuality. I think there's so much that we could do to prepare parents to have these really difficult conversations, but we are not interested in that at all, and we will not fund it at all.
Shereen, did you see that our governor and our attorney general, Derek Brown, have sued Snapchat on behalf of Utahns, accusing the social media platform of designing its app to be addictive to children?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, again, I think we're interested in trying to go after these institutions, these tools, while doing almost nothing to invest in early interventions around children's mental health. We think about the amount of dollars that are being cut now from school programs, after school programs. We think about the amount that's been cut from local communities to invest in, ways that we can bring people together in real life. With the disinvestment that we have right now happening in all of the ways that children's lives are enriched is really concerning to me. So yeah, go ahead and sue them. Yes, it's addictive. I agree with that. But what are we actually doing to create a society where people and kids feel connected and valued? Not that much.
Yeah. John, would you, I mean, if you were AG, would this be a suit you'd take?
Well, I can't speak to the AG's office.
I forget. John works in the AG's office.
Yeah. So, but in the broader sense, you look and see some of the dynamics when it comes to the various social media companies and how they try and make them more enticing. Some would say addictive. Mm-hmm. You know, in this case, it's, okay, I got to check regularly before this image disappears and all that type of stuff is designed to, you know, drive our animal instincts to crave being more attached to that device and that app versus being engaged in the real world, like Shereen was talking about.
There's a lot of porn on X, and we have not seen really action to address that at all. We know that that's an addictive, you know, place for people to be. We see our own Senator Mike Lee, I think, really diving into the addictive side of those hits, the likes, the, you know, engagement.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a platform that is overrun with really explicit content. But I don't really see our governor going after that.
This is a depressing, it is to me, a depressing, episode of Both Sides of the Aisle, because these are such deep, dark, challenging problems.
Yep.
And in this case, we're talking about our children.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're a parent and you're trying to say, I don't want you on that app, I don't want you to have a phone, well, then why am I different? Every other kid in the school has it. And then we're, you know, branching into the whole debate about whether or not phones should be in schools.
Yeah. John, did you see the latest report that the Hispanic population, Latinos, were half of the state's growth between 2023 and 2024 in this state?
And Ross, I didn't see the report, but it doesn't surprise me.
So can you remind me, I think one of the things, I just had a number of visitors here, and one of the things they said was, we're actually kind of surprised by how diverse it is. Mm-hmm. So can you remind me, we are not the most diverse state, we're not actually mm-hmm. not even close, mm-hmm. but we aren't the least diverse state either.
No, about 34th among states.
Yeah.
But that makes Ohio less diverse than us. It makes Missouri less diverse than us. Minnesota, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Wisconsin. Yeah. And we're about the same as Pennsylvania, which surprises people.
Yeah.
But it's because of our Hispanic population, which is about 17% of the state. When I started my career, we were 1 in 10, a racial and ethnic minority, and we are now 1 in 4.
Wow.
Stunning.
Yeah. Stunning.
Yeah, stunning. And by the way, in Salt Lake County, Hispanic population represented 77% of Salt Lake County's growth.
Growth.
Yeah. Yeah. So this county.
Of the growth. But what is it of the base?
I don't know, but I would guess about 30%, something like that.
I was going to say, in my memory, Salt Lake City was close to 25% when I was in office, which was a few years ago.
Yeah, sounds good. Hey, you know, you got the dog days of summer. And I always think about safety, highway safety and whatnot. Do you guys ever like talk about this with your family about how to stay safe in the summer months when we're doing so much driving and things?
Yeah,
you
we do.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we're lucky that we were able to go put new tires on the truck.
Nice. That's a big deal.
So yes, it's expensive, but making sure that you're kind of getting those tune-ups and things like that. I think distracted driving is probably the biggest part of it for me. Making sure that I've got my notifications on quiet when I'm driving down to Moab or whatever it might be, which can be, I think, a very small step that people can take. You can put your phone on focus and then you just aren't tempted to look.
I never talked as much about summer. It was much more about winter.
Oh, interesting.
In winter, making sure the car was filled up, making sure you had, blanket, coats, whatever in the car, just in case something broke down. And so
I know that our Utah Department of Transportation, they always say, stay sober, buckle up. And don't be distracted.
Yeah.
Those are their big things. We got to do our weekly chat about Senator Lee, you too.
Yeah, I brought him up. I'm sorry.
We already did. He's also gotten.
Is this going to become a feature segment of the show?
Well, he's gotten a split.
What are you doing?
We're going to have to title it.
He's gotten a split with President Trump on NATO. And this is, I guess President Trump has seen the light that NATO is actually important.
Yeah.
And Senator
some
Lee
benefits, huh?
wants to leave the military alliance. What do you guys see?
Well,
there?
I thought we were going to talk about how he voted to explode our deficit, but let's talk about NATO. So I think that I have to say, I'm proud of our senator for having an opinion of his own again.
Threats that existed when we formed NATO.
Is that a compliment or?
the threats that exist when we formed NATO are no longer here 76 years later. And I'm like, what news is he reading?
Yeah, what news is he reading? So what are the threats that you think about when he says something like that?
I mean, I just think there's so much division right now in our world. And then you see the aggression from Eastern Europe and you see, this move towards authoritarianism and different types of government. And it's worked. What hasn't worked about NATO?
Yeah.
We've kept peace for all these years.
Well, there's been peace. Now, is it due to NATO? Is it due to other forces? That's the issue. I mean, there are pros and cons to NATO. NATO can be a vehicle for us to bring together as different countries to look for ways to make the world safer and to collaborate. Clearly, there's been freeloading when it comes to different participants in NATO. There's been costs that have had to be borne. There's certain dysfunctions that comes with the NATO process.
Yeah.
So it's not just all unicorns and rainbows. There are pros and cons to it.
Yeah. John, you do a lot in education. We're seeing a lot of indications that the funding freeze of federal money is going to really affect school districts in our state. This is a lot of Title I, Title II, Title III data or funding. But basically, you've got federal grants that are not going to be forthcoming, and you're going to start seeing a pinch in public education funding in this state that comes from the federal government. I just got to think that we're going to feel this.
I think there'll be some aspects. I mean, federal funding only comprises about 10% of public education funding. You may feel more of a pinch when it comes to higher ed, but in public ed, we have talked for years and years about excessive dependence on the federal government. And if we get whipsawed with changes in a program, or we get whipsawed with funding gets turned on and turned off, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
And so we will now see this. And I come from the camp, which is this is exhibit number one, why I don't think the federal government should be in the education business, which should be up to states and local communities.
And I'll just add that 10% does not feel like over-reliance on the federal government. But the thing that's so heartbreaking about this for me is that it is the schools that have the biggest gaps, that have the most diverse students, that have more students with disabilities. Those are the places where our federal dollars are backfilling more, are filling in more. So to know that those are the kids that are going to suffer the most from this is, I think, abhorrent.
Yeah,
morally
this
abhorrent.
Is after-school summer programs, funding for migrant students, funding for English
learners.
As a second language.
Disabled students.
Yes. Yeah. That's who suffers. Yeah.
So we got just 20 seconds left in the program. Last word from you, Shireen.
I'll just say, as dark as this may feel, I do think that we can get organized and do better. Let's go.
John, are you dark or are you bright today?
No, I'm bright. I love July, whether it's Independence Day, whether it's Pioneer Day. It's a beautiful time to celebrate this great country, the more perfect union that we're trying to work to create.
Oh, that's a wrap, except for I woke up feeling sad and discouraged, and I've replaced it with feeling gratitude and hope. That's my advice for everyone. Hey, everyone, great program. Thanks for being with us. John Dougal, Shireen Gourbani. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.